Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Daniel A. Nelson Podcast. This is where we play and talk about the music you love. Today, I have a gentleman I just recently met by the name of Jeremy Jenkins. Jeremy, say hello to my audience.
How you doing? This is Jeremy.
All right, Jeremy. What's going on? How's your day been coming along?
Man, it's good. Just got off of work and, you know, excited to be here and be on this podcast.
Oh, man, I thank you for just taking time out of your busy schedule to do. We're going to jump right into it because I don't know a lot about you. I just recently met you about a week or so ago, and we got a chance to play together. But I want to know about your humble beginnings and what brought you into playing drums or just into the music field. So my first question is, I'm going to ask you, where you're from?
Oh, yeah. I'm originally from born and raised Pasadena, California, by way of Los Angeles. But born and raised in Pasadena, I moved to the IE, grew up in Chino Hills for a little bit, then a little bit of Ontario, then back to Pasadena. And now I reside in L.A. So I'm a Los Angeles native, I would consider myself.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Now, and you got a couple of brothers and sisters that play instruments or anything like that?
Actually, it's funny. I have none of my brothers and sisters do any musical. I do have some cousins. I do have a cousin that's like really big in Disney right now, and she does music. So I feel like that's pretty much all I have in it.
Oh, well, that's cool. That's cool. Now, this might be a little bit personal, but I'm going to go ahead and ask. You don't have to answer. How old are you?
I am 32 as of June 22nd.
All right, 32.
Yes.
And how long have you been playing your instrument? And tell us your instrument you've been playing. I'm sorry about that. Let's start with that. The instrument that you...
I play drums, and I have been playing since the early age of 4 years old. I started playing. That's when I found my passion. Well, I found my passion a lot earlier than that, but the true passion for it was definitely, you know, was gradually grown, but definitely at the age of four is when I really solidified that this was going to be my instrument.
Wow. Now, who was playing the drums, or what did you see that sparked that? Was there a particular person? It a church thing, or was it a television program?
Yeah, you know, it was just growing up in a household full of brothers and things being chaotic around because, you know, there was six of us. You know, I learned that, you know, loud was okay. My mom was big in church, and my family... We went to Second Baptist Church in Monrovia, and I just, you know, the one thing instrument that drew my attention was drums, and it's always been that way. I just loved the way it made me feel. I loved how loud it was. I loved what the drummer was doing. It just stuck with me, and it was just a calling, and it was something that I just loved to do.
Okay. Now, you don't play any other instruments, do you?
I dabble with bass. I can play a little bit of bass and keys and guitar. So I dabble with all of those, but I'm not enough to carry a gig, but at least enough to, if I needed to record, you know, I could do some stuff.
All right. Yeah. Let's segue into that. Your first time playing in a live setting, how old were you?
Oh, man. Does church count, or are you talking about?
Oh yeah, church count, man. Church is the biggest thing, brother.
Yeah,
you know me, man.
Yeah. Mine would, I would say about five, because I started playing for the children's church choir at a young age. When I was 5 years old, I was already dwelling with playing with the children's church choir and really learning the art of drumming. It wasn't just now it became. Not just something I was interested in, it actually became something like I was very, very be interested in, and maybe more interested than anything else at that age as a kid. So my mom and dad allowed me to play for the church.
Man, that's pretty serious because, see, you mentioned you're about 32, 33, somewhere around there. That's when the Mississippi Mass Junior Choir and stuff like that, you're playing songs like that caliber, huh?
I would say more just like, I would say like, you know, I'm not saying going to say the cheesy kid songs, but some songs that were just super simple pocket, you know, not too hard, you know, but not too easy either. And I just progressed as I went along.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. That's good. Let me ask you this, as you got older, and of course I know the circle grows, let's segue into that as far as playing with different church artists or different circular artists. Did you ever get into?
Yeah, I definitely, as time went on, you know, I was able to play with different artists, and just with your circle growing, you get to learn to play with, you know, people start trusting you and calling you for things, and it's definitely allowed myself to play for secular artists. It's allowed me to play for a lot of church stuff, a lot of church artists that come and do different things. So, yeah, I've been blessed to be able to do that.
Okay. Now, how did you get connections with these different church artists or even secular artists? How did that come about?
For me, for the church artists was a lot of the church I go to. My minister of music was really big in the music industry as far as like with singing with other gospel artists. So sometimes my name would just be thrown up if they needed a drummer, or sometimes they did workshops at the church and they would use the house band, which was I was in, and it allowed me to play with, you know, like artists like Brent Jones. I've done some stuff with B.B. Winans and things like that because of just being in that circle and just being able to get that call.
Right. Okay. So the bottom line is now, would you say that being faithful to your instrument and being the person of integrity helped get the calls?
Yes, for sure. I think I think we had this conversation. I think I felt like, you know, they talk about how your character, your talent can get you in your room and in a room, but your character keeps you there. And I feel like that's been very important in my career, because I feel like a lot of times the calls that I get are because people trust me, that they know that I'm a man of integrity. I'm going to show up. I'm going to do my part. I'm going to play with everything I have. I'm going to give everything I have. I'm going to show up knowing the tunes to the best of my ability, and I'm going to have a good time. And I feel like that's what keeps me working and keeps me going, is because of the integrity and staying true to my instrument and staying and understanding that, you know, I have to work just as hard as anybody else on my instrument, because there's people out there working 10 times harder than I am and practicing, you know, 8 hours a day as a full-time job, and I don't want to take that for granted by just getting on.
Jeremy, I think we lost connection there. Jeremy, I think we lost connection there. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Say that one more time. I know you said a mouthful, but just you can make it concise, or if you just want to say the full thing all over again. Repeat that one more time.
Yeah, I was saying that I feel like the character being a man of character is a lot of reasons why I was able to stay in these rooms and keep, you know, it's not just talent. It's also about being good at what you do. And I feel like staying true to your instrument, playing and practicing are so important, because there's someone out there that's working just as hard, if not as harder than you, to be in your position. And I think sometimes as musicians, we take that for granted and we don't get those calls and we get discouraged and things like that. And I just feel like staying true to your instrument, being a man of character or woman of character, is very important in keeping and maintaining these gigs.
Okay. You mentioned the word practice, and some people love the practice. Some people hate to practice. What advice can you give to make practice interesting? I mean, how do you?
Yeah. So for me, for a long time, practice for me was just sitting behind and just playing to some of my favorite tracks. But I've realized being able to be versatile in any type of music, whether it's funk, country, R&B, Latin, it's more about being able to sit down, understand. Well, the first thing you need to do is learn your instrument, like learn the ins and outs of it. What does it do? What can you do with it? How can you make it sound something? How do you learn rhythms? How do you learn the different heartbeats and different, and being true and authentic to that style of music? And I feel like what I did was I definitely took into consideration the different styles of music and wanting to feel authentic to it. And one of the drummers that like I look at when I practice and when I listen to is Stanley Randolph. Like, that man sounds authentic to anything he plays, and it's so good. And I just was like, I want to be like that. I want to sound authentic, but by a while also creating your own sound, because a lot of times we want to emulate people, but then we lose who we are and our sound. So I think it's just as important to be able to have those practice rudiments and know what to practice. Don't just practice to you know, learn the song. Practice to make it the song yours, and without losing its integrity, like where you're not overplaying, but you when you get behind there, people know, like, oh, that's Jeremy playing, like that's, and I know that song. So I think that's a big thing with practicing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you would kind of practice with different tracks of nature. That's good to know, because you know there are some people who just like, I hate to practice, but they look at the end results of another person, and they want that. Right. And I'm glad you spoke of that. So the bottom line is, you're kind of setting your goals and your hours of practice. When you practice, do you set a specific time of the day, and you do that every day of the week, or maybe three times out of the week? Or is it a thing to where you like, oh, I can't practice a day but 30 minutes on Monday, but I can practice on Wednesday for, you know, 3 hours? Is it like that with you, or
no?
It should be.
It'd be nice to, in the perfect world, it'd be nice to be able to say I'm gonna play for 3 hours on Monday. I'm gonna play for 3 hours on Tuesday. I work a lot, so I just play when I can. But you know, having the ability to be able to play multiple venues or multiple shows a week allows me to stay precise. And when I'm learning new music, I'm definitely practicing. I'm the type of person that after I play the song on the drum set, I feel way more comfortable than as of just listening to the song. So I definitely set time aside, you know, whether it's warming up. I think warming up is a really big thing that a lot of people don't do. And it's very, really, very important. And I learned that from Tony Royster, that you have to warm up. Tony Royster Jr., like, that warming up is really key into your playing. It prevents injuries, it prevents fatigue, a lot of different things that we go through as musicians. So I think practicing for me is just, I practice when I can, and I try to do it once a week, and sometimes I don't get to it, but I at least sit behind a drum set at least 1 to 2 times a week.
Oh, that's good. So let me ask you this. Now, do you ever record yourself and kind of do an honest assessment about how you're progressing?
Oh yeah, I think that's important. I think that's a measuring in anything. In anything you do, you should always measure where you've come from and look at it. Because I think, you know, being as human beings, we are the hardest critics on ourselves. So I think sometimes being able to listen to ourselves and get feedback is very important. So I definitely record myself, and I, you know, not all the time, but when I'm doing, you know, recordings, I think it's important to record yourself, you know, and have a measuring from where you are.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. That's good to know, because, you know, you mentioned about in a perfect world, and I think life does bring a lot of change with people, you know, with just, whether it be spouse or church, work, or whatever you have going on in your life. And you would like to set aside, you know, 2 hours, but it doesn't happen. But with that being said, though, how do you, how can I put this? I know we talked about carving out the time and recording, but how do you enlighten someone else on your craft? Because we got a chance to play together, and you said there's times where you might only get to sit down, you know, 2 or 3 times a week. So how do you enlighten someone on helping them assess themselves on getting better?
I think that you have to, when you're assessing yourself, you have to have realistic expectations and have a goal in mind. I feel like sometimes we get behind, we get so caught up in practicing and we're like, oh, we're not good at this one thing, but there's just so much more to it. Like, what's the goal for when we practice? What are we learning? What is the end goal? And I feel like if you have those in mind when you're practicing, like, oh, I really want to practice at this tempo, or I really want to work on this feel, and I want to make this feel good. I want to work on this style of music, and learn that music and sound authentic to it. I think those are measuring points, and I think those are important when practicing and getting better. And it sounds authentic when you go and play a Latin gig and everybody's like, wow, I didn't know you played Latin, or wow, that was so good, it felt good. I mean, as a drummer, that's nothing better than saying, oh man, you sat right there in that pocket and it felt so good, because that's what it's about. You know, you can do all the licks and all the different things, but if it doesn't feel good, you know, it doesn't translate to people dancing or having a good time, because they don't, not everybody's going to understand, you know, a 6-tuplet roll or 30 second notes, you know, and they're going to, but they'll understand feels, what a song feels like, and staying authentic and true to it with making it fun for yourself. And I think that's the part that people need to understand. Practice is making it feel good.
Man, okay, yeah, you kind of beat me to the punch, because I wanted to segue into that about the approach of the approach in a song,
right?
You know, because there are some songs that might need that little extra whatever it is. And I'll be honest with you, there are times where I'm sitting down just practicing, because, and I might just be just practicing scales for about 30, 40 minutes, and that's probably all I might do instead of sit down and learn a song. And, you know, I'm inundated with a bunch of songs I have to learn all the time. But I want to ask you, you kind of hit there a little bit, but let me ask you about approaching songs. How do you approach songs? I mean, I know they're different songs, but how do you approach it? Do you actually sit down and listen to them first, or give me your take on that?
Yeah, how I approach songs, it depends on what the song calls for. I think the biggest thing for me is when I get music, new music that I have to learn, I sit down with it. The first thing I do is I'll put it on my phone. I listen to it. I learn patterns. What is the drummer doing in this track? Okay, so is the kick on 1 and 3 and the snare on 2 and 4? Is it off rhythms? What is the drummer doing? And then after I'm listening to patterns and I learn the patterns, then I'm listening to what everybody else is doing. Now, how can I spice that up? How can I make like accents, or how can I, you know, what is the singer doing? Maybe I can hit a splash or I can do a fill that matches something that the singer or the keyboard or the bass player is doing. And so my approach is always to be tasteful, to not to be overplay, but to be tasteful in the song so that it makes it feel good and it makes it feel authentic while still letting me be me and making sure that it's still, you know, it's still authentic to the pattern and everything like that. You know, like, you know, prime example, I know on Sunday we played like Candy. It's a simple pattern. But if it's not played right, then it doesn't sound authentic to the song. And it's crazy because that pattern is so well known and so overdone that people can just mess it up and it really just sound like so messy. But if you learn the patterns and you play patterns, I think that will keep you on a gig more than you being able to do all the crazy stuff that all these other drummers do, like, you know. And that's my approach. And I was told at a young age, you know, I was able to do all those things, but I was told hey, by one of my mentors. He said, those, all that stuff is great. And when the time calls and your name is called and they say, Jeremy, go for it, then bring that out. But until that time, that's not going to keep you on a gig. And I've watched friends and I've watched people get kicked off of gigs because they overplay, because they're not staying true to their lane. If your lane is just to hit a C flat major on one part of the song and that's what they're paying you for, then that's what you do. Just like me. If my job says play a rhythm and I play that all night and I just set up hits and that's what it calls for, no fills, that's what I do. And that's what it's calls for. And I feel like that's what keeps us getting called for gigs, is we staying consistent to what we do.
Man, Jeremy, that's really good. You know, because I'm a YouTube junkie, and I think my followers know this already. And I'm watching a lot of keyboard licks, and there are times where I'm like, "Oh, I want that! I want that!" But yeah. I did an interview just a little while back, and mentioned, he says, "Well, here's the thing: the style of music that you're playing, does it fit?" It's right. just like buying a keyboard that doesn't fit your music per se, you know.
Right.
So I'm glad you spoke of that about, because there are times where you're right. I have seen some people that have overplayed, and they're wonderful people, don't get me wrong, but they have overplayed and lost a lot of gigs because of that. I want to go back to something that you spoke about, because this is very important. This is my podcast. It's called Playing and Talking About the Music You Love. But I want to get back to character, because a lot of my younger musicians need to be taught that, you know.
Yeah.
So let's rehash that. Give me some more advice on the character building of a person, especially if they're, you know, starting off in humble beginnings, or they happen to be really good.
Right.
What can you
go ahead? No, go ahead. Finish.
I was going to ask you, what can you recommend or give out some helpful tips to help someone in that capacity?
Well, yeah. Well, first, I feel, going back on character, I feel, you know, at a young age, every musician goes through a state where we're like, I already know it. Like, I know this song, and we fail to watch. I think growing up in the church, sitting behind another drummer and just waiting for my opportunity was humbling. I think that sitting behind somebody, watching them and watching their every move, one, how they carry themselves, how they show up, are they prepared? What can you emulate? What can you do better? And I think for me, that was my humble beginning, because I sat behind Benny Rogers II. He plays for Big Bang, Mariah Carey. And that was my mentor.
Man.
Yeah, he was my mentor for a long time and still is my brother. I can still call him and ask him everything, you know, when we got into electronics and all kinds of stuff. And he's always been there for me. But I was able to sit behind him for years before I got my opportunity. And I sat behind him for years and watched. And I felt like that built a lot of character, because I was able to watch how he approached things, why he approached things, how he played, and what he played like. And I felt like that was so important in building the person I am today. Now, how does that tie into character? It taught me that sometimes you have to just wait your turn. Sometimes a gig is not meant for you, and you might go to a gig. And the one thing that I was taught in school, and one of my good mentors told me, he said, you'll know you're ready for a gig when you can go to somebody else's gig and you can say, oh, that was good. And when you have that envy in your heart, like, this dude is not even good, why is he playing this gig? And you're wondering, like, I can do that better. And you're only thinking, oh, based off his skill, that he shouldn't be doing this gig. But you don't know what got him there. Was it his talent? Maybe he's just a good person and he plays his part. And then maybe the part doesn't call for all the fancy stuff we're looking for. Or maybe he's not, you know, flashy and stuff like that. But he's holding down the gig. And that really made me realize, like, are we as musicians, you know, our community is so small. It's big, but right. so small. And we judge right. people based off of what they do. But maybe the gig that they call for only called for to sit in the pocket and 2 and 4 and maybe do a little splash here and there. So I really learned that about, and I felt like that was a really big character builder for me too. And like I said earlier, you know, talent can get you in a room because you can audition and have all the greatest talent in the world and you might get the gig, but you might not. But how do you bounce back if you don't get the gig? If you know you're talented enough, how do you bounce back? And that goes with character, because sometimes people, you go to these auditions and these guys have egos and they walk in and they know they're good. And people read off that, but you know, that, you know, I think we had this conversation when we were sitting and talking. For me, there's three things that the gig has, but it has to have two out of the three things for me to take the gig. It has to either be good money, good music, or good people. And it has to have two of those things. So if the money's not good, it has to have good people and good music, you know? And I feel like when you humble yourself for that and you really take on that persona, that will keep you in the room. And that will keep you working more than just your talent alone. Because when people see that you're a good person, that you have a good heart and you're doing it because you for your love and you're not just chasing money. Now, don't get it twisted. Money is very important. But when you do it for your love and the passion of your instrument, you will get more calls and more work than you will just based off of pure talent. Because nobody wants to work with somebody that's great in talent but doesn't follow and has no character.
Wow, Jerry, man, I'm telling you, I am truly blessed to have met you, and you know, we're gonna stay connected, man. I'm telling you, this is a blessing. I'm so glad to have you on the show, and you just taking 30 minutes out of your time to do this, because I really truly believe that my audience needs to hear something like this. You are a blessing to the music industry, as well as just being a friend. And just, I thank you, man.
Oh, man.
Thank you.
You know, I really appreciate you letting me be on this platform. And I would love to, you know, like I said, if I could offer any advice to anybody listening, you know, it's really about practicing you and what your brand is and staying true to it. Now, it's okay to emulate other people, but staying true to yourself. Staying true to your instrument and having a love and passion and just being an overall good person. And I think those are so important keys to staying working and being that guy that they call because you're a good person.
Man, Jeremy, thank you so much, man. We're going to be keeping in touch, and I know we're going to be playing together real soon, man. I'm going to make that happen, man.
For sure, man.
Bless you, man. And enjoy the rest of this beautiful day. And we'll talking, man. Hey, God bless you, bro.
Thank you, man, so much. I really appreciate it. And blessings to everybody out there.
All right. Be safe.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right.